Hey, welcome to Black Law Bill and Gutton Tribal Edition. We're here in the city of Gimoi, and wherever you are listening to this program, I hope you're doing well. Thanks to our friends at Bumabipa Media 98.7 FM in the city of Gimoi. Here on the Yidinji Territory, we broadcast this program weekly, and we've been doing it for the last nearly 10 years. And we talk about sovereignty and a few other things, and joining me today is Ganyara, the Attorney General for the Sovereign Yidinji Government. Yirrkala and Bumi are overseas at the moment in terms of outside of the Yidinji Territory, and they've got some other businesses happening around the place. But we're going to go overseas for our first little venture into the program today, Ganyara. But it's been an interesting week, to say the least, in the land of the long white cloud, which many people call New Zealand or Aotearoa. There's another name for it that is off the top of my head at the moment. It's Ika Te Māui. But let's have a listen now, where a group of members of parliament there from the ACT party, the ACT party, interrupted parliament with a haka. Let's take a listen to this. But also that resulted in a lot of, non-Māori or a mixed response from commentators, even here in the Sky News area on the Australian continent, that is.
Identity politics doesn't accept equal votes. Racemongers don't accept that. So a minor Māori party in that parliament closed that parliament with a haka, a Māori war dance, with Labour MPs joining in this attack on democracy. Here's the politician who screamed out that haka, claiming that this is the only way she knows how to behave, being, you know, Māori.
This is all that I know, is to be Māori.
I mean, what nonsense, spare me. The ACT leader, David Seymour, who himself has Māori ancestry, called out this tribal thuggery for exactly what it was.
What I didn't hear in the debate today is a logical reason to oppose the principles in this bill. That is the real challenge for the people on the other side. I think lacking good arguments, they are behaving like that.
Joining me is the panel. There's James McPherson from The Late Debate here on Sky News, and Evelyn Ray, farmer, former policewoman and Sky News regular. I mean, James, that's all she knows, is this politician doing a war dance rather than accept a vote. And I think this is where race politics ultimately ends, right? Your response.
Yeah, well, Andrew, this is what happens, sadly, when you allow a 22-year-old into parliament. She's more suited to being an influencer on TikTok than a representative in a democratic parliament. At best, you would call that a temper tantrum, wearing a cloak of culture to disguise it. But in reality, it's a reminder of what's at stake. When you tear up the principle of equality, which she literally did, we saw on the video there that she took the bill that's under discussion and she tore it in half. When you do that, you end up with rank tribalism. And so we saw there a war dance which is designed to intimidate. Now, if intimidation doesn't work, what have you got left? You've got violence. And that's what the Brits lifted the Maoris out of, intertribal violence, to a society where we are all equal before the law and we all have a say and we work out our differences by talking and debating principles rather than resorting to what we saw in the parliament. It was a disgrace. And I tell you, there are a lot of Maori people, many of whom I know, who saw that and said they were shocked and embarrassed by it. She does not represent Maoris in New Zealand, who, frankly, were horrified at what they saw, many of them.
I just wonder, when they want to declare a race war, do they realise that they're actually outnumbered? I mean, God forbid, if it came to that, they're actually desperately outnumbered. What are they asking for? And Evelyn, can you imagine the uproar if white politicians screamed at, got in the face of other politicians in Parliament in an intimidating way, got in the face of Aboriginal or Maori politicians?
Look, Andrew, I can imagine it, actually. I think all of us can. Let's not forget what recently happened to Pauline Hanson. And that wasn't even to an Indigenous Australian, and she wasn't even yelling. So I think that paints a pretty accurate picture of what we could expect if something like this was reciprocated and flipped on its head. But, you know, sadly, we have to live in a country now where we're afraid to speak because of fear of social consequences and now legal ones. And we have to live with the fact that we've kind of invited this into our country, into every aspect and sphere of, you know, how we live our lives. You know, if we do not change this about our country and about Western countries around the world, our children and our grandchildren are going to look back on this in their history studies in school, and they're going to be writing essays about how we single-handedly destroyed the country because we were afraid to be called a slur, a racist, or a white supremacist, or whatever else they want to slap us with. And I think the only way that we're going to get out of this hole that we've put ourselves in is by saying enough is enough. You know, we need really strong politicians who, quite frankly, don't mind wearing these, you know, tired labels that they continue to slap on us, who's, you know, out of line of the narrative. And we also need a public who can really think for themselves and see through all of these smear campaigns. And, you know, Andrew, the sad part is if we can't do these two very simple things, we are going to lose democracy. We are going to lose equality under the law. And in the end, our children and our grandchildren will lose because of that.
Kanyara, Andrew Bolt has made some pretty interesting claims and suggestions there, that this is a culture war and declaring war in the parliament. And it's an interesting view, considering that all those people on the panel were, European of nature. I don't think they live in New Zealand either. So it's just an observation. But these things can be quite complex, but there is obviously a reason why New Zealand, Australia, Canada and the USA were the last ones to sign up to UNDRIP for the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And when you look at it, it can get a bit messy when people hear about capacity and should people act like that in the Australian Parliament, like Lydia Thorpe, should people like this woman act like that in their Parliament in New Zealand, for example. But an interesting commentary overall.
Oh, look, I like Sky News, especially with Andrew. You know, the way he portrays the white supremacist view, which, you know, the democratic view, as they say, the democracy. But let's go back a few years. Let's go back to the original treaty, the Treaty of Waitangi. When that was first set up there in the 1800s, Andrew sort of got a little bit that report got a little bit misconstrued, in that it was the British were taken wanting to stop the natives from killing themselves. That was couldn't be any more further from the truth. What it was, the Maori or the Tangata te Whenua, whatever you want to call them, they were really hammering the British. They were really, they knew what they were doing, and they took it out on the British quite savagely. And the British actually said, look, we've got to just call a truce to all this, and we'll do a treaty between us. And it wasn't all, by the way, it wasn't all the tribes. It was only some of the tribes on the Northern Island, not even all of them on the Northern Island, took part in the Treaty of Waitangi. The Southern Island was not included at all, none of them, not one from there. So it's still untreated. But the treaty was between the British, three paragraphs, three little articles, you could call it, about what was going to happen. And it was all about sovereignty not being ceded. The Maori's going to look after their part of the world, the British were going to look after their people, and the Maori's were going to be treated like British. You know, they're going to get the rights of British in that respect, which is quite interesting, because we fast forward then to when the Crown become divisible. You know, in the 1920s and 1930s, all the declarations and that basically come out and said, look, we're going to make a divisible crown. And so the treaty was signed up in the early 1900s. Fast forward 100 years, the Crown party to the treaty becomes divisible. The treaty was not renegotiated. It should have been, because one of the parties to the treaty had changed its status. So it should have been renegotiated. Which then leads us to an interesting situation today. We come forward another roughly 100 years to where we now have the New Zealanders bunging on a turn about this treaty. about this woman doing this so-called war dance, you know, the haka. What really is going on there? These are New Zealanders, by the way, complaining about the Maoris, the original people whose sovereignty is still there, so it's not treated away, it's not ceded, complaining about they wanting certain rights. The Treaty of Waitangi in 2015 was said, the report come out from the Treaty Commission that treaty is valid, legit today, between the British and the Maoris, not the New Zealand and the Maoris. This is all about capacity and who you are. But it's quite simple. The New Zealanders are not British. No way, no shape. I'd love to go down to have a yarn to these people about this. Where did the New Zealanders become, where did they become British to have the equal rights under the treaty? Or where did the British become New Zealanders because they're not party to this agreement?
Yeah, you can see that even in the rugby union, there's different teams. There's Great Britain or, you know, the Lions, whoever they are, and there's New Zealand. And there are those interesting differences there. And even with the passport, yes, you're a Commonwealth country, but you're not one of us. So it's a very important distinction.
Well, the important distinction is who's the king? Who is the king of New Zealand? The king and right of New Zealand? Who is the king of the UK? These are two totally different legal figureheads. Same bloke, same man in charge of that position, fills those positions, but he can't do them both at the same time.
Yeah, so Charles, as king of England, let's say, can't be the king of New Zealand, he can't be the king of Australia at the same time. He can only wear one crown or one hat at that point in time when he's acting. So this is the thing where the tribes, not only here but elsewhere, have to know how to wear a hat. And this is what the Sovereign Yidinji government is. It is a legal hat or the crown. We have a Yidinji crown here.
It's legit.
100%. That's what this is really comes down to now. Are people lost in that world thinking they want to change inside of New Zealand or change inside of Australia where they are equal under the law? It may not be that in reality, but on paper, which is where the legislation is everyone's equal under the law. Now, the interesting observation with Waitangi is that at the time it was signed or not signed, was created, Maori outnumbered British subjects 40-1. Now it's not that. What were the provisions of a transfer clause? What were the amendments to the treaty, if you can? And that's where legislation is really interesting, because you can make proposed legislation changes to that, but which parliament are you doing that in? Yeah. Which governance structure?
And this is the craziness of it, you know. As they say in that story, the Sky News story, the haka is a declaration of war. What about, just think for a sec, what he just said, what was said there. What about if the Maoris invoke the treaty, go back to their original capacity, like what we've done, and invoke the treaty fully, and get on to King Charles. Hey, King, old bloke, you better send some battleships down. Send the warships, because we've got these Kiwis that are interfering in our life. These New Zealanders, they aren't British. Now, you better send the battleship down, because if you don't, the treaty is dead in the water and you will not have any legitimacy of claim as the king of the UK, and the New Zealanders will be trespassers or be belligerent occupiers on our country, which you haven't remedied under the treaty.
And by the way, you have to decolonise. So at the moment, you've got some sort of foot on our soil because of this historic agreement, but if you're not going to honour it, then get off.
Well, it's all over. The treaty's dead.
Yeah, exactly.
So then they become belligerent occupants, just like what the Commonwealth of Australia is at present. So they want to be careful what they say in their news reports, because if they want to call it a declaration of war, be very careful, because that's why I say I'd love to speak to these original people down there to say, look, all you got to do is ring up King Charles, King of the UK, not the King of New Zealand, right of New Zealand, not the King, King of Australia, not the King and right of Canada, the King of the UK. Charlie, old boy, I'm talking to you now as the King of the UK. You better send your battleship down, because you British had written in a contract here called a treaty that you would protect us from all other incoming things. Something that should have been renegotiated when the Crown became divisible, with the Statute of Westminster. They busted the Crown up, Crown and Right of Australia, Crown and Right of New Zealand, all that rubbish. But they didn't renegotiate that contract, that treaty, which should have been done. So they talk about now this is the thing against democracy. What is democracy? Democracy is where you honour the laws, you know, where you honour the rules of the game. That's what it is all about. You know, they say, oh, it's a democratic vote. Well, back then when that treaty was negotiated, it was the English crown, the crown of the UK, had negotiated with some mob down there, on that island down there, to work together, to coexist peacefully together. The British would look after their people, the Maoris would look after theirs, and the British would protect the Maoris from any other incomers. I'm sad to say, the New Zealand are trespassers, they're foreigners, they're foreign to everything.
Yeah, and one of the other things that sort of annoyed me a little bit was that the woman on the panel was saying that, you know, we're going to have to look our grandchildren in the face and say that we lost it, we let it go, or something to that effect anyway. And you know, that you have to protect democracy, and it sort of whiffs of the sentiment that was happening in the Trump fanaticism that took place recently. And I'm not for or against Trump. I mean, that's the US, you know. Like, obviously, we want to make connections with tribal nations around the world, and, you know, we don't have an issue with the UN member states, but sort of don't interfere with us and stop us from doing our business. But, you know, that's not democracy, and you know, nowhere in the US Constitution is the word democracy written down. So people need to get their heads right in that space about, you know, making these claims and assertions and things like that.
Well, look, all these UN member states all subscribe to international law, the law of rules and the rules of law. So they all subscribe to this international thing, this international body, where that international body and other UN member states can recognise each other. Now, if we want to believe in the rule of law, okay, one rule that was written down in 1960 was 1514 from the General Assembly. Everyone agreed on this. The majority passed this resolution that the world decolonise. All go home to where you come from. And all its forms and manifestations must come to a speedy and unconditional end. Period. End of argument. What are the New Zealanders? They're a manifestation of the colonial empire that went down there. They're a form of it because the deal was done between the Maoris and the British, and then they got this manifestation of the British Empire there, which is now the what you want to call the UN member state, New Zealand, where they got a king in right in New Zealand, not the king of the UK, king in right. Same bloke fills the same shoes, you know what I mean? Same, fills all the different shoes. So we got this imperial world. That's it. Agree. If you want to agree with the rule of law and be a UN member state, why don't you abide by the rules, by the laws of the UN, which is all go home, or do a deal with the local mob properly. So they've got to renegotiate that Treaty of Waitangi. And now I know there's been massive protests across New Zealand. They're all marching, heading towards Parliament to do this, you know. And this bill, and it's the woman who actually tore up that bill. She's a woman who has shoes in both worlds. You know, she's of original heritage blood from there, which is the Maori blood. But she's been seen legally and politically through a New Zealand identity in that instant she tore up the bill. All she's got to do is say, look, have a nice day. I'm going back to my original sovereignty, the one that's still here, the one that signed up to the Treaty of Waitangi. I'm going back there and I'm going to ring a king up. Not the king and right of New Zealand. I'm going to ring the king up, king of UK. Charlie, send your battleships. These New Zealanders are being a real pain in the neck here and they're harming our people, which is in contravention to the Treaty of Waitangi, the one that the Commission said in 2015 is real. It's legit.
Yeah, it's all legit and all real. And you're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the country today, thanks to the Yidinji Broadcast Service and our friends at Bumbabipra Media 98.7 FM. If you're listening to this inside of Australia, it's probably via the National Indigenous Radio Service. We'll be back after the break.
Oh, jumping, legs shaking, cries all around. The earth is quaking from stories passed down. Black, yellow, red are the colors I see, defining the culture that's inside of me. Back, spitting original raps, and perhaps you're gonna take it home, chuck it on and lace to that particular track. And as a matter of fact, what's the essence of culture? If you could just tell me that. As I ran an indigenous story, shed blood, sweat, and tears through my peers for many years, trying to bring much glory to warriors and ancestors. Less spiritual footprints forming, I follow up on me, and other systems trying to ignore the colored MC. Same time, bullet men sitting up top upon the sideline, trying to adore and suppress the murder in me. So, with respect and courtesy, indebted to the beat. Forget it, don't worry about it, it's not accepted. Never was an option for thee. Same struggle and pain, the black brothers gotta get through on a regular day to day basis, man. It's just the same old, same old.
Foot stomping, legs shaking, cries all around. The earth is quaking from stories passed down. Black, yellow, red are the colors I see, defining the culture that's inside of me.
Hey, it's Baker Boy here. You're listening to Radio BPM 98.7 FM. Check it out. Keep those ears ringing.
Our music is growing. I'm using my money game. So money, you know, money, you know, money, you know, money, you know.
Welcome back to the show. Kinyara, the good thing about Sky News complaining about this stuff is that it really does identify there's this impasse or this sense of injustice or justice or inequality or equality or however they want to spin it. The most important thing now is that the majority of the world and a majority of citizens inside those countries are learning a little bit more, I would say, civics education, a little bit more about the history, about why can laws attach themselves to individuals, how does parliament work, and the whole Trump hype has really, and along with COVID, I guess, really sort of planted those seeds about why can governments do what they do. And I think most people sort of had that in the back of their mind, but it sort of became a bit more real in the last few years, I think. And even more so with our subject matter last time was just pseudo law and sovereign citizens, learning about their rights and obligations and, you know, even though some of them are way off the mark, there's some truth to what they're studying and talking about. But the most important thing is that the members of the Australian Parliament and the Senate, for example, the upper house and the lower house, who've both been in this particular office here for discussions, some of them, are now writing about things like the Uluru Statement and about Aboriginal sovereignty, and even to the point where Crown experts mentioning Yidinji.
Rather strange, isn't it? Why are they talking about Yidinji? You know, there was a Tony McAvoy, for example, had to give testimony recently, and he mentioned the Yidinji government, the Yidinji nation. And as one of the senators said, or one of those on the panel had asked him, we didn't hear of that, the Cairns entity, as they put it, the Cairns entity. But it was made very clear that Yidinji is doing its thing, that we're actually replicating a modern system of government that the Western world can recognise, not only us, you know, or not only the Indigenous people, but the Western world can do it. Interestingly, there was a Freedom of Information letter come out, or, you know, Freedom of Information that was released between the Federal Attorney General and Adam Band. Now, it was made very clear in there that the Aboriginal people still have all their sovereignty. They still retain it. Now, the federal government, the head of legals of the Commonwealth of Australia, has made a statement in an email to Adam Bandt that sovereignty is still there for the Indigenous people. Why aren't the Australians? Why isn't that woman on that panel with Andrew Bolt questioning that? What's going on here? Why isn't she ringing up the federal attorney general? Hey, dude, what the hell's going down? Tell us about this continuing sovereignty of these people. can tell us how come it wasn't, how we haven't extinguished it. Tell us how come it hasn't been ceded to us. Tell us how come we think we're in charge of the country when really the Aboriginal people have this first in time sovereignty that's unceded, unextinguished, and it coexists outside of the Australian world. So that's the sort of stuff Andrew Bolt should be asking. Get on to the Federal Attorney General. Dude, you better tell me what's going down, because I'm making a fool of myself on air on this this New Zealand thing. Andrew, maybe check out the Treaty of Waitangi. Maybe check out where the Crown become divisible. Check out where the treaty didn't get renegotiated. Check out contractual status. And understand what's going on. You know, it's good to be a mouthpiece for a certain belief, you know, a white supremacist belief. And there was a lot of stuff come out recently about the Aboriginal people should be grateful for the colonisation and all the good stuff that colonialism has brought, as well as all the bad stuff, you know. So we've got to be so careful of what we want to portray as we want to leave for our grandkids. You know, they should be asking about this stuff. What's going on? How do we remedy the situation that our grandfathers made so that my grandkids can have a good life here? And this is what Yidinji is all about. We're doing this for no money, by the way, and the federal government know that. And then we get a mention in these things like this report that, or this testimony that McAvoy had to give to the government. You know, that, yeah, Yidinji, they got, and we got every right to do what we're doing. They can't stop us do what we're doing. They know that. Federal government, federal attorney general, says, you know, you can't stop that mob because they got their sovereignty. I was reading an interesting paper recently. It was put out last year by Professor Hobbs about Cinderella stamps. It was a really interesting read about all these pseudo-law rubbish, the sovereign citizen movements that can make all these what they call stickers. Can make them all, and it's all rubbish. You know, it's all make-believe. But I tell you right now, there was not one mention of Yidinji government. Not one mention of Yidinji stamps, because they know our stamps are made under legislation from the sovereignty that predates that of the Commonwealth of Australia. Now, apparently Professor Hobbs got a package from a group in East Timor that were claiming to be the Sultanate or whatever it was. They were these sultans and they could issue all these stamps, but they couldn't be recognised under international law, which is a real problem because they are not legitimate states of international law. Australia is, US is, Canada is, New Zealand is. But do they subscribe fully to international law when they don't abide by Resolution 1514 of the General Assembly, where it says decolonise in all its forms and manifestations, go back to where you come, or do a deal with the mob? You know, this is the crazy part about it. It's good to say we subscribe to the rule of law. We're going to be the golden-haired boys of the rule of law, but act it. Walk the walk and talk the talk. Don't just say, oh, we're gonna. This is where it all goes wrong. The likes of Andrew Bolt get on Sky News and make these statements that how is it an attack of democracy? Democracy has no right to be here yet. Their version of democracy, the tribes had democracy. They all got along pretty reasonable. You know, they say, oh, how savage they were, fighting and arguing, like they said in that treaty, that report of that woman down there doing the haka. Oh, they were all fighting. We had to save them from each other. They didn't have to save them from each other. They had to save the British from being annihilated when they invaded that territory. So, you know, they've really got to start to assess what they want to subscribe to called democracy, or is it really a racket for something else? But, you know, this letter of Andrew Bolt of Adam to Adam Bandt made it very clear. Sovereignty was not ceded. Very clear.
Yeah, and Mark Dreyfus is the Attorney General, I think, under Kevin Rudd and Julia Gillard, and either one of those two or both. And he is of Jewish descent, so he would totally understand the tribal point of view here. And he knows for sure that the Yidinji Nation, and I've had chats with Mark about our constitution and things like that in an unofficial manner, like just a cup of tea in a conversation. And he could really identify the Israeli statehood journey in relation to Yidinji's. So that's what I'm saying now. The belief is that God gave Israel some sort of land and ability to have a nation and a king and laws and all this kind of stuff. And we're just saying, well, that's what we're doing. And, you know, we don't need a standing army or anything like that, but at this stage, I don't think, when you believe in the boss, he looks after us. So that's the main security guard, really, that we worry about. But ultimately, no one can really fault what we're doing. However, I would agree with people pointing at us and saying we're doing the wrong thing if we're trying to hedge our bets inside of Australia. So if I'm rattling the tin over this side and I'm going back into Australia and collecting Centrelink or this, that and the other, clearly that's not sovereignty. Clearly sovereignty is about staying on this side and helping build the nation, rebuild it, just like Nehemiah in the Bible talked about rebuilding the wall and the nation of Israel and all these things. That's what we're doing here. Someone needs to keep the light on in the office while others come in out and report and assist. And that's what Yidinji is doing. And, I mean, these UN member states, some of them Security Council members, writing to us saying that we're a friendly nation, acknowledging and recognising that we have a government, a system of legal representation, land tenure, all this kind of stuff is really important. I think it's wonderful. I just wish more people would have a look at it.
It's too simple. You know, actually, I was reading an interesting legal case the other day there, Tickle versus Giggle. As funny as it sounds, it makes a very clear definition of biological sex versus legal sex. You know, this is so important. It's the same here, that the legal identity is different to the human, the real identity. And this is what, like King Charles, he can have all these crowns to wear, but he can't wear them all at the same time. He can be the king of the UK or the king of New Zealand or the king of Australia, but he can't be all three at one day.
Just like Gaia and Wallaburra and Smith and Jones, you can't wear the same hats at the same time. You got to stick with one at that particular point of time. And if there is a contract to have dual nationality, you can use the other one when you can. The Australian one doesn't have permission to be here from the Yidinji one, which is why we're on this road to help remedy that and build that mechanism for Australia.
It's all about the human surviving. The human has to survive no matter what happens. This is you want to talk about human rights in the big international world. Nothing is more important than the human surviving. Nothing is more important than the sustenance to maintain life. That's just a God-given right to do whatever you got to do to keep alive. But we can't be using the legal identity inside your dingy world and then going over to Australia with it and try and bash Australia. Because any Australian citizen, and I'll say citizen, not the human, the citizen, the illegal identity, has to protect what creates it. Just like our Yidinji citizen must protect the Yidinji government, because the government created the legal identity for the human who has human rights, the human to participate in the life of the Yidinji nation, just as the Australian citizen is created by the Commonwealth of Australia to allow the same human to participate in the life of Australia. So, but you can't be wearing both hats together. So I can't be here bashing Australia as the Australian, because that would be treasonous to the Commonwealth of Australia. I've got to be here in Yidinji capacity to talk about the issues of Yidinji, because remember, there's no treaty yet, there's no formal agreement, there's no right for Australia to be here, which is why our sovereignty still exists. It's unceded, unextinguished, and it coexists with that of Australia. Now, the Commonwealth of Australia, I ask everyone, where's Australia? And they point to all the hills and trees and all that sort of stuff. No, I mean the Commonwealth of Australia. Yeah, that's the biological Australia. You know, like we just said, there's a difference between biological sex and legal sex as to what's what. Well, that's the biological Australia when you point to trees and all that. But where's the legal Australia? Where's the Commonwealth of Australia? Because when you read their definitions, you know, you go through their dictionary, especially with legislation, Commonwealth of Australia. But when used in a geographical sense, includes the islands. What about if it's not used in a geographical sense? It must be the paper one that hangs on the wall. So we have a paper Yidinji and a real Yidinji. They have a paper Australia, but where's the real Australia? They don't have a deal to have the real Australia yet with the people who do possess the real country. So this is what we're saying. This is all about now the legal world doing proper deals together to allow the biological things, the humans and that, to coexist on the biological Australia.
Yeah, and that's why... you know, you talked about the biological and the natural. That's why rivers can have rights, because there's a piece of paper that assigns those rights to a river in New Zealand, for example. Or I could identify as a furry or as a cat if I wanted to, but people are going, no, you're not. You're just you're a man, but I'll pull out a card that says I'm a cat. And that's fine. I don't have an issue with people identifying with that kind of stuff. But in reality, the biological or the natural is something else. And that's where the tribal law resides, is in this natural spiritual place, and the fiction or the legal fiction is the pieces of paper. But ultimately, the Yidinji Nation has to create their legal fiction to talk to the other fictitious legal entities out there that are majority ruling or have some sort of authority over the non-natural.
Yeah, look, you know, I get a lot of stuff about the allodial title. You know, Yidinji, you know, you don't want to treat away the allodial title. We're not going to treat away the allodial title. That is the natural world, as you put it, the biological world. That is there, not up for grabs. What we will do is issue a treaty to the legal titles of the world here, not the root title. We can't link the root title and the allodial title for sale. It's not for sale. But we can make a legal link that if they misbehave with the treaty that we're pushing forward to, that they sever that link to the original root title, the allodial title, as people want to call it, that we sever that and it's gone. And Australia can pack all its junk up and go. You know, maybe there's better nations out there that might want to do a proper deal, like Israel, for example, or the US, for example, or China. You know, we just name the international actors that may be interested in getting some country here. And Australia's got no right to stop us doing that. Our choice is to give Australia as a preferred supplier of that treaty, you know, the items of the treaty. And we won't make it like the Treaty of Waitangi, where it's very hazy and grey. We'll make sure there's a transfer clause in, should one of the parties want to change its status, which is quite possible, that the treaty gets renegotiated.
Yeah, and that's why in this office, the biological can walk in here and say, I want to become Yidinji, and we put it on the identity, on the piece of paper and the identity card or a digital ID, and that is what they use. Now, they can't use that inside of Australia yet, but they can use it at the international level, and it has some sort of acknowledgement and recognition that there's something there, like Hobbes talks about, like Tony McAvoy talks about, like the Australian Parliament and the Federal Court talks about Yidinji.
Well, the question I ask everyone, you know, where's Australia? Where's the international Australia, the Commonwealth of Australia, the real world? And anyone who's travelled overseas, travelled through an airport overseas, you come into the airport as in a member of the state, as an Australian citizen, with your passport in your hand.
Well, let's use the Cairns airport, for example. So let's say you're an Australian, you're going through Cairns, you're a Queenslander or an Aussie, right, yeah, until you get to the international gate, and then what happens?
Well, that's where customs, you know, and immigration scan your passport. You're given your passport, they scan it. Immediately, the minute they scan that, you've actually left Australia. You haven't taken a step anywhere, but you've immediately left Australia. You go past that check-in point, that immigration checkpoint. Why is it the tax office can't reach over into duty-free? You think about that. The tax office, it's a bench that's no more than, it's a shop shelf that's no more than 10 paces from you that's got duty-free, tax-free goods on it. Why? The tax office can't reach in there. You have officially left Australia, the Commonwealth of Australia. You're still on the land, the biological, the natural Australia, but you've left.
And that's where the King of Australia can then put his King of Australia hat away. And in international law, if he's going to go back to London, he pulls out his identity for the King of the UK or England.
Well, he leaves here. He's the King of Australia here. He gets to that international checkpoint. And he becomes just Charlie, the nobody. I'm just going to travel over to the UK. But when I get off the plane over there, I'm going to become Charlie, the King of the UK. Or if he goes to New Zealand from here, he's going to become the King of New Zealand, in right of New Zealand. But he's not going to be the King of Australia down there because it's back here. Now, it's a really interesting position with the monarchy, the English monarchy. When he leaves, when King Charles leaves the UK, there's four other people hold his position. So he's in the air now. He's in between the UK and here. The Governor General is still the King's representative here until the plane lands here and King Charles gets off, or Charlie gets off, crosses immigration and becomes the King of Australia. That's when the Governor General stands down and the King of Australia is here, and there's four people over in the UK that fill his position there in right of, waiting for the King to come back. So then you get the point where the King of Australia leaves, He gets at the immigration border checkpoint, scans his passport or whatever happens. The Governor-General now takes over, and this is just Charlie the man getting back on a plane, whatever the plane is, and he's a nobody. So there's no one actually wearing the crown of whatever nation that he's... He's got 15 crowns he can wear. So he's going to fly down to New Zealand. He puts his... When he crosses immigration there, he becomes the king and right of New Zealand. The Governor-General is filling the role here. The four people over in the UK are filling his role there, but now he's the king of New Zealand. Think about that.
Yeah, and look, if he went to visit the British High Commission for some reason in New Zealand, they would address him as the king of the UK because he's on British soil, so to speak, through their treaties, right?
Well, look at all the embassies of the world. You go to any embassy inside Australia, say, let's say the American embassy. When you cross that threshold, that gate, the front gate, you're actually standing on what is perceived to be American soil.
Which is the same as the international airport going into the duty-free or the international sphere, right?
It's all just lines on a map. You're still on biological or natural Australia, but the paper now shows that you are on American soil, on perceived American, the legal America, the legal United States. Same if you want to go into the Russian embassy, for example, on Australian territory. You walk over a line, you've now entered the Russian Federation, you've left Australia, you're on the Russian Federation. What's this going on? You've just walked over a line on a map.
But for us, it's the Ngambri territory. It's the, you know, it's a Gummaragal territory that people would say North Sydney or... So these are the relationships that we're forming. That is, it precedes the Russia or the Australia or the America, the UN. If you look at Google Maps and you have all these different layers, for example, you can see where the street sides or restaurants are. You click on the tribal territories, that's the world we're operating in, right?
And who's got the right to lay claim to the joint? How did the Commonwealth of Australia get the right to lay claim to the joint when there's no treaty done? And this is why I'm saying to people like Andrew Bolt, you want to get your facts checked before you start spruiking on air because, to me, you're reducing your mental capacity. You're showing to me that you aren't of sufficient capacity to understand what's going on. You know, you're just a voice piece for something else. Understand the facts. The facts are the Aboriginal people have got unceded, unextinguished sovereignty over the whole country, the whole box and dice. Australia hadn't got a right because the Federal Court or the High Court of Australia rejected terra nullius. There was no one here, which meant there was someone here. And then the old belief that iudi posset edison sets in. Okay, when there's an argument, the original owners who have unbroken title have right to the place. So, Andrew, be careful what you say because maybe you are fueling a fire that's wrong. You know, it's just not quite going to work the way you hope it is.
You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today, thanks to the Energy Broadcast Service. We'll be back after the break with some final comments.
I'm Gian. I'm Brooklyn. And you're listening to BBN.
Welcome back to the show. Gagnon, this might be the one of the last programs for the year. I'm not too sure, but I know that Bumma Bipra staff are going on holiday soon. We keep touching some of the most exciting things happening next year or some of the things that you were very happy with this year. I know that you've mentioned things about pseudo-law and or gammon law, let's say, where they're mixing up too many things and people should be concentrating on their tribal law, codifying that. But let's go to and fro. Some of the highlights from this year first, from your point of view.
Oh, look. Ducking down to the big smoke down there, what they want to call Canberra, early in the year there, really got to meet some interesting people. I got a feeling that they understand just exactly what's going on. They understand how it all fits together. That was something to behold. The people who understand the legal world understand exactly what's happening. And as they said, we're right. One of the academics that come up to the tribal forum said, no uncertain terms, use a right. And this is from one of the more prestigious universities in Australia, very highly ranked. Not some, you know, make-believe gammon university where you give them $10 and you get a degree or a doctorate and whatever you really want to be. So this is more legitimate. But the tribal forum brought together quite a number of people that can start to get their head around what's going on. And that's where we've got to educate the people. And it's been a big task this year trying to educate people because there's always that possibility that they do fall back into that that what I keep calling pseudo-law belief, you know, that you sign a magical document and put your fingerprint on it and all of a sudden the world's going to cave into you. The world doesn't operate that way. You've got to be legitimate to get people to understand what you're doing. And it's been a fantastic year for education from my point of view. And where we know we're going, we're right. We're correct. We're 100% right, as it said to us. When I mentioned Judy Posidetis, we are the original owners, we're still the owners. It's just highlighting more and more, like that email from the Federal Attorney General to Bant, that they know exactly what's going on. We know that they know. And that now they know that we know that they know. So you see what I'm saying? It's been such a big learning lesson for everyone, but we know we're right. We know we're doing the right thing. We know we're doing it for the right reason, which is for our grandkids, our great-grandkids, and not only ours, all kids on the country, not just, my immediate family, it's all for me. No more. This is for all the families that want to live on our country so we can look after our people. We don't want to end up in a major argument. And as you mentioned earlier in the show there about raising a standing army, we don't need to raise a standing army. Australia has got a standing army, or whoever we do a deal with. You know, this is what's going to be so careful. Why do we want to create any more havoc and wreak any more problems to the world that's already so troubled, you know, to where everyone's killing themselves, which is just what we don't need. We don't need any more of our mob dead, but we don't need any more of Australia dead. We want to keep this peace on this country and keep it intact. We don't need to be war-torn. We don't need to go to that level to argue. We'll play the long game. We'll play the slow game, and we'll make sure we're right at every step of the way. But we're getting confirmation, like from the Federal Attorney General, to that email to Bent, that we're right. Our sovereignty is unceded. We got it from the ANU. We got it from all these academics around Australia that we're right. So if we're right, what do we want to jeopardise that for, to play this short, sharp game of kicking someone up the backside to try and prove how big a bully we really are? We don't need to do that. We need to play this the long game.
So looking forward now, 2025, what do you see happening with the SYG? There's some exciting things that are, I guess, on the cusp of happening with the digital money, the treasury, AI-assisted Yidinji, all this kind of stuff.
The currency is the big one. The ability to enter into commerce or commercial arrangement, commercial agreement. And the Yidinji dollar, by the way, is creating some massive inroads into the world of commerce. Not many people understand exactly how this works. You know, there's been a lot of the digital currencies purporting to be out there. I see Bitcoin has taken a massive spike up, you know, when Donald Trump said Bitcoin to the moon. You know, but Bitcoin is not legitimate money. It's not legal tender. It's not currency status. It's traded as a bag of potatoes, for example, a commodity. A bag of potatoes is a bag of potatoes. Bitcoin is a Bitcoin. And when you see it valued in US dollars going up, Bitcoin is just a Bitcoin. The US dollars are devaluing. It's not inflation. It's devaluation on a massive scale now. So 90,000 US dollars, roughly, or 92 the other day, to buy one Bitcoin. Why does it take 92,000 of them to buy one of those, when 12 years ago it took $20? 20 US dollars bought a Bitcoin, or you got a Bitcoin. Could you imagine what's going on with that? It hadn't gone up in anything. It's still a Bitcoin, but the dollars are falling. Now, that's all going to come home to roost. But Yidinji dollar is backed by substance. And as that develops further and further with the Yidinji Development Bank, you know, to where there is an international exchange mechanism from the UN world into Yidinji, that's going to be the big thing of this coming year. And then as we get to the International Forum again in, mid-August, I would suggest that as many people as possible should attend that, you know, just to understand. Come and witness for your own eyes. Come and witness these legal experts, these academics of the world agreeing with what we're saying. Come along to that. So it's got to, you know, August is going to come around fast enough. It's super quick now. We're just powering on. We're quarter of the way there already, roughly. When you'd been planning this for so long, we're a quarter of the way. We've only got three quarters to go. So that's going to push forward the legal from the Treasury side. But the legal side now has to be the push towards that legal agreement with Australia.
Yeah, I think that's going to be an important road. I think there is momentum building in favour of what we're doing, clearly, in my view. But also the international ongoings of uncertainty, instability, when we're the ones providing stability and security. I think when people start to fear or panic, they're really going to look for that foundation to build a new Australia on, or a new world on, or whatever it may be. They're going to have the tribal trust.